Welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Michigan Democrats, of course, had a really historic night last Tuesday on Election Day. They won really big at the ballot box in a year when democracy itself was on the ballot in some ways and when it was a midterm. Typically a time when the party in power in Washington, in the White House, gets punished. Instead, here, Democrats swept all three statewide offices and won majorities in both houses of the legislature, something that hasn't been true in 40 years. Michigan Democrats are going to control the state house for the first time in 12 years. And the party made history again last week when House Democrats chose State Rep Joe Tate of Detroit as the new House Speaker. He will be the first African-American man to lead the chamber when he officially takes over in January. As Speaker, it'll be his job to make sure legislation gets passed in the House and that Democrats accomplish their agenda for residents of this state. So what is the party going to do with the ability to pass its agenda and to do it pretty much on its own for the first time in 40 years? What are the priorities that Democrats have in Lansing? And are all the members of the party aligned around what they think is best for Michigan? Reminder, we have seen this kind of alignment on the other side of the aisle before, quite recently, in fact, and the last few years of Rick Snyder's governorship, he had a hard time making anything happen with the Republican legislature. So it's not an automatic license to just do whatever you want just because you control the governorship and both houses of the legislature. So that does leave a lot of questions about what we will see come January out of the first Democratic majority in the legislature in Lansing in 40 years. So we've got Joe Tate with us here to talk about this milestone, this historic milestone, and to talk about what Democrats plan to do when they take over in January. Joe Tate, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hi, good morning, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
Yes, it's great to have you here. So let's start with this. We knew that redistricting was going to make seats look different here in Michigan after we voted to hand that process over to voters in 2018. We knew that seats would probably be more competitive, but I'm not sure anyone expected that Democrats could win majorities in both the state house and the Senate in the first cycle. So what message do you think resonated with Michigan voters that creates this new majority?
Well, I think on our end, voters, you know, they expressed their power by putting us in majorities in the House and the Senate and reelecting the governor. I think the strong message, there are two things. First, what we saw from the leadership of the governor in her first term, being able to focus on historic investments in both education, infrastructure, job creation, and then looking at both the House and Senate Democrats. I mean, we took the lead on a significant amount of issues, working in partnership with the governor, doing things in a bipartisan fashion. And when we came out on the campaign trail, we talked about those issues. And we also talked about what we see as a vision for the future of the state. So ensuring that, you know, our economy is growing, ensuring that citizens are treated equally before the eyes of the state government, ensuring that, you know, that voting, being able to vote and lower barriers to vote and ensuring no one's obstructing that. I think that definitely resonated across the board for Michigan residents. And I think that's what we saw, and we were excited about the outcome.
Yeah, yeah. So in her acceptance speech, the governor already listed a number of things for her agenda. And in an interview, you said that, you know, there will be no secrets or surprises here in terms of once we have our agenda and collective vision together. So give me a timeline for, you know, preparing what both houses, I guess, of the legislature will be doing once January comes. And again, you have more power than you've had in 40 years.
Absolutely. So when we look at, and you mentioned too at the beginning, alignment, and I've been mentioning coordination and making sure that we are coordinated across the chambers and in the governor's office. But also, I think you saw the issues that we've been talking about in the House. We've been talking about them for 12 years. So how are we supporting, first and foremost, I should say, is bodily autonomy. I mean, that's been, you know, we saw what happened and took place with Proposal 3, but obviously we have laws on the books like the 1931 abortion ban that, you know, we have to be able to send a signal there that, you know, we're ensuring that, you know, the voters, you know, ensured during Proposal 3 that was important. Also workers' rights, ensuring that we are supporting our workers across the state of Michigan, not only, you know, safety environment, but making sure, you know, that there are opportunities or that, you know, there's fair wages for fair work. We will see that. We'll also see ensuring that we are expanding as well to, you know, civil rights with what we're looking at, making sure that everyone is on an equal footing before the eyes of the government. And also those basic issues as well as improving infrastructure, you know, being able to target resources for our roads and our water infrastructure systems, and as well as our education systems. We know we have a long way to go. And a big part of that is, you know, how are we directing those resources? Are we giving our schools and putting them in the best position to make our kids successful in the classroom?
Yeah, yeah. So I want to talk just a little about expectations and the things that are on voters' minds that I think they will be looking to Lansing to try to address right away. And of course, top of that list, I think, is inflation and that part of the economy, which, you know, is hitting everybody's wallet pretty hard. Are things like tax breaks, tax reforms, maybe first on the agenda because of the urgency of the problems with inflation and people's pocketbook issues? Will people be able to see this new majority addressing that quickly once January comes?
Absolutely. I know that's certainly going to be at the top of the list. Keeping money in people's pocketbooks is incredibly important. So they're you know, they have more dollars to put food on the table and pay their bills. You know, one item in particular is increasing the earned income tax credit, mm-hmm. which during, you know, when Republicans were in control, that was something that was reduced. But we can, you know, we can double and triple that opportunity for working families to receive, to keep those dollars in their pocket. The other item too is the retirement tax. That's something that's been something that was implemented during when Republicans had control. I think that's an opportunity for us too to ensure that that's something as well that we can keep money in people's pockets as well too, and ensure that, you know, those promises that were made are being kept. So I think there are opportunities for tax relief and done in a thoughtful way. Those are just two items, but there are other items, and I know that we can definitely look at as well. And then the other side of that coin too, Stephen, is, you know, what are we doing with attracting jobs and creating jobs, mm-hmm. and making sure that we are putting the state in the best position? You know, the governor has certainly taken the lead, and we've partnered with her and as Democrats to bring investment to the state of Michigan for job creation. So there are those opportunities for having good paying, not only jobs, but careers moving forward and making this state attractive, in particular for me, obviously, the city of Detroit attractive for people that want to come and not only live here, but work here as well.
Yeah. I'm talking with State Rep Joe Tate. He's a Democrat from here in Detroit. He will also be, come January, the Speaker of the House in Lansing, the first time an African-American will occupy that space. We're talking about Democrats, though, and their historic win last week, voters handing complete control of Lansing, the governorship, the other two statewide offices, and both houses of the legislature over to Democrats for the first time in a really long time. Talking about what the agenda looks like come January and what voters might expect in terms of results. I also want to hear from you during the conversation, of course. Do you have questions about what Democrats will be doing when they take control in January? What are the things that are on your list? What are the things that you're concerned about them addressing? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll include you in the conversation that way. Joe, I want to talk just a little about the last time Democrats had this power in Lansing. It was the early 1980s, and it didn't last very long. There was a tax increase that came pretty quickly behind that majority, and then there were recall elections for some of the people needed to maintain that majority. And Democrats have not had a majority in the Senate since then. So what's different about this time? What are some of the, I guess, the lessons you could draw from that? But also, it's been a long time since Democrats had this kind of power in Lansing. And that means that the infrastructure inside the chamber, for instance, to maintain leadership and to build leadership, it's a little rusty, if not a little depleted. Talk about both managing expectations, but also managing the chambers for the first time in a really long time.
Absolutely. That's a great question, Stephen. And I think, as you know, the Democratic Party, we are a group of coalitions. We are diverse. We're coming from all areas of the state, from Detroit to the Upper Peninsula. And I think that's something that we should lean on in terms of, you know, our diversity. That's what makes us strong, because I think that's, you know, in terms of who we're talking to, just in a wider audience of Michigan residents that we are touching. But you're right. It's been a long while since we've had this opportunity here. And I think our focus is making sure that voices are being heard and that we are staying connected with all of our residents across the state, understanding their issues. And as you mentioned, you know, being able to set those expectations. So not only, you know, coordination for myself with the incoming Senate Majority Leader, Winnie Brinks from the west side of the state, but Governor Whitmer and her team, as well as our other statewide electeds, as well as the Lieutenant Governor, the Attorney General, the Secretary of State. It's going to be important for us to make sure that, you know, we are in alignment there. And I know we will be, and then be able to get that message out to Michigan residents and to show tangible results. I think at the end of the day, you know, being from Detroit, from Southeast Michigan, we have to be able to show that we are in charge, and this is how we are changing and supporting and improving lives through the way that we govern. And we have to do that. If we don't, we're not doing our job at the end of the day. So making that effort to be able to engage with our coalitions and be able to have a plan on how to do that and be able to communicate that plan.
Yeah, yeah. No surprise, we've got a number of callers who want to speak with you, Joe. But before we get to them, I do want to talk about this milestone, this incredible milestone that you will represent when you become the Speaker of the House in January, the first African-American to be in that kind of leadership role in Lansing. Just first, obviously, I want to say congratulations as another African-American man from here in Detroit. But tell us about the meaning for you of all this, and also just tell our listeners a little about how you come to this role. You've got a really interesting path, I think, that you've followed to this point.
Thanks, Stephen. Absolutely. So first things first, I certainly didn't get here by myself. I am not an island. I'm standing on the shoulders of others. And that includes the legislators that came before me, in particular, Black legislators and the path that they forged. Following behind them. And for me, it starts with my family. My dad was a firefighter for the city of Detroit. My mom was a public school teacher for the city for a number of years. And instilling service and giving back and being involved in the community. I did take a straight path here. I was involved in athletics and in the military before I came back home and decided to do a second service in the legislature. And, one of the most important, for me, the history behind it. But one of the most important women in my life is my grandmother. She's 100 years old. Mm-hmm. And she came to Michigan, to Detroit from Alabama to seek a better life. And, we see the evil and injustice of government. I mean, she saw it with segregation and Jim Crow. But we also saw the good she saw the good with Civil Rights Act, Voting Rights Act, Medicare, Medicaid. So, having that responsibility of showing the good of government is something that's important to me. And especially as a Black man and as a Detroiter, that's something that's always going to be on my mind.
Yeah, yeah. What for you are priorities that you'd like to forward in Lansing as a Detroiter? I mean, lots of folks in the city would talk about the cold shoulder that I think we feel like we get oftentimes from Lansing, that there isn't enough support for the things that really matter here. What role do you see yourself playing in maybe putting those things a little higher on the agenda?
Absolutely. And for me, I'm an Eastsider, for me personally, outside of what we talked about, I've seen, just the challenges with our infrastructure system and our flooding and, a few years back with the high lake levels and high river levels, bringing resources to bear to support residents that are here to prevent flooding. Also housing. I think there are some real opportunities for attainable housing. We are, the state should be involved in supporting just such a critical piece of people's lives and where they live. And that's incredibly important. Obviously there's so much dignity that comes with home ownership, but also, where you decide to if you rent either way. So how are we ensuring that we're bringing additional units online, but doing it, making sure that it's attainable, that it's affordable, and that we aren't, you know, pushing people out of neighborhoods as well. That's going to be something that's incredibly important. That's something that's personally important to me, those two items. And I think bringing the resources to bear from the state is going to be priority mine and something that I will be able to do and support.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Joe Tate, who will be the Speaker of the House in Lansing come January. We got a lot of calls lined up to ask questions of the new Speaker. John on the east side, Lindsay in Detroit, Leslie in Hazel Park, David in Ann Arbor, Mike in Detroit. He'll be up first if you want to join them. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can try to include your comments that way. Stay where you are. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your connection to what's happening in Detroit.
WDET is your place for open dialogue about the issues that impact you.
Stay in the know.
This is WDET FM,
Detroit's NPR station.
WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Our guest right now is Joe Tate, a state rep from here in Detroit, who will become the Speaker of the House in Lansing, the first African-American Speaker of the House come January, thanks to the big wins that Democrats racked up last week during the election. We're talking about what the Democratic legislative agenda will look like in January, what things they hope to get done, what things you as voters might notice that will get done, things that may ease some of the problems you're having, especially with the economy. Also want to hear from you directly about what's on your mind as Democrats stand ready to take power in Lansing. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation that way. I'll start with Twitter here. Big Neo says, I'd like to see the legislature change the gas tax law in Michigan. Currently, wholesale sales of gas are not taxed, which means companies like UPS and FedEx aren't chipping in for the roads. They need to figure out a way to get EVs chipping in too. Gas tax is something that we've talked a lot about. Tax increases for roads were on Governor Whitmer's agenda 4 years ago when she was originally elected. Joe Tate, talk, though, about this question of wholesale gasoline sales and gas tax in general.
Absolutely. And what's important, I think, which was in the question is, you know, for a number of years, how we've relied on the gas tax and for revenue. And obviously that's changing. Mm-hmm. That's changing for the better with EVs coming on the road, reduced emissions, not only across the state, but the region and the globe is incredibly important. But, you know, we still have to be able to fix the roads with the revenues that we do receive. So we do have to take a hard look at that. I know other states have begun that process, and we have somewhat in terms of, you know, what is it going to look like when people start adopting EVs or even hybrids more. What does that look like for gas tax revenue? But also there's the other side as well, too, are the prices. We know that's certainly a burden on Michigan residents when we look at the price of gas. So we have to find a sustainable solution that's going to involve EVs and it's going to involve how we have to relook at how we are collecting those revenues with cars on the road.
Yeah. Again, Big Neo, appreciate the comment on Twitter. Let's go to Lindsay in Detroit. Lindsay, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
Sure.
First of all, congratulations, Representative Tate. I'm a new constituent of yours now after the districts have been redrawn. And I was wanting to bring up driver's licenses for all. So right now, you know, undocumented folks in Michigan are not allowed to get driver's licenses after 2008 when that was taken away from them. It's something we've been working to try to get through the legislature for several years now. And we'd love to see you be a champion of that. You can learn more about it at a town hall tomorrow evening if you're interested. Mm. But yeah, what do you think about the idea of driver's licenses for all?
Yeah, great question, Lindsay. I really appreciate it. Go ahead, Joe.
Yes, that's a great question, Lindsay. I know that's something that we've been supportive of. I believe my colleague Alex Garza. This is something that I know has been on his radar, ensuring that we do have driver's license for all, and having conversations with a number of groups. I think it absolutely makes sense. You know, we should be able to ensure that people have these opportunities, and being able to put that in the position to support and not to have, you know, people driving without a license is something that is, you know, it doesn't help the state, it doesn't help us. I know we had legislation introduced this session, but that's something that, you know, we'll certainly be looking at for next legislative session, see if we can move and find a solution to that.
Yeah. Lindsay, appreciate the call and, of course, the info there. Let's go to Leslie in Hazel Park. Leslie, what's on your mind?
Yes, I'm a retiree, and it baffles me to death the fact that we're now being being taxed on our retirement. And I was wondering if there's anything that is in the making, or if you can, is it possible if you can introduce some sort of legislation to remove that? Because we've already paid on that, and it should be illegal to tax again the people that don't have the ability to up their to like take overtime or something like that.
Hmm. Leslie, I really appreciate the call and that issue. Joe, of course, the pension tax is pretty controversial. It's very unpopular, I know, with seniors. What's the outlook for that and doing something about it once Democrats take over in January?
Yes, thank you for the question, Leslie. And you're right. I mean, we have made a promise to pensioners around that, and that promise was broken, you know, during when Republicans were in charge. So this is something that has been talked about. I know that this is something that Democrats have looked at, and also, you know, I would say too, is something that is we have seen some bipartisan support around, you know, eliminating you know, taxes and tax relief. Something that the governor has brought up. I currently serve on appropriations as well, so there have been several discussions around this in terms of, you know, how do we get this and create this tax relief go back to having those pensions and those pensions not being taxed. So it's something that's definitely at the top of our mind as something that, you know, we will see in the next legislative session, especially where we're at in terms of our footing fiscally as well, too. We have an opportunity to do that with our balance sheet.
Yeah, you know, we do have lots of money in Lansing for the first time in a long time. I mean, more money, in fact, than I can ever remember. you know, an administration kind of, kicking things off with. But a lot of it is one-time money. I mean, it's coming from ARPA. It's coming from some of the other things that the federal government's trying to do to help out states and local governments. If you change something like a pension tax, though, that's a permanent revenue source. And there are other things that we've talked about that would change the overall balance sheet over a long period of time. Talk about the balance, though, I guess, of being able to use this money that way, or do you feel like the growth in tax receipts overall, which has also happened, is enough to be able to do some of these things?
Yes, you're right. We do right now have a robust balance sheet, and there is a lot of those resources have come from the federal government through ARPA and support during the COVID pandemic. But we have to be thoughtful. At the end of the day, we can't, we can't take a chainsaw to, the budget in terms of, cutting revenue sources. We have to be thoughtful. I view it more as a scalpel. And what we've talked about, for a number of years, our values around putting more money in people's pockets, and two items that still stand out, are the retirement or pension tax that we do have, as well as earned income tax credit. So I think those are ways that we can absorb that without lowering what we need to do to operate government and provide services to Michigan residents. We have to be thoughtful at the end of the day. We want to be prudent, but we want to make sure that also that we're not overburdening Michigan residents with the tax burden.
Yeah, Tobias on Twitter says you were duped on auto no fault reform. Rates are going up. How are you going to fix it?
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is. When we looked at it, it was my first term when we had auto no-fault reform. And, the big question was, at the end of the day, and as a Detroiter, we're paying one of the highest, highest auto insurance rates in the country. And, I think we saw anecdotally, I think people see across the city, what happens and what are those effects when people don't and can't afford auto insurance. And that's something we're going to have to look at. You're absolutely right. I mean, no legislation is perfect. Anything that we enact, we try to solve problems and sometimes we create new challenges. So that's something in terms of auto no fault, we have to be able to look at. We saw some of the things done by the governor, in terms of trying to provide more relief there. I know with the rebate from MMCA as well. But we do have to take a look at it, see, what does it look like, and is it having the impacts that it was supposed to be having? If not, take a look at it and see, what makes sense in terms of moving forward.
Yeah. Do you think that the compromise we made for that, which allows people to forego the most expensive part of insurance, which is the guarantee of long-term care if you're in, a terrible wreck, do you think that was a reasonable compromise? I mean, I worry a lot about folks not having that. Let's put the price of insurance aside for a second, and I think there are a lot of things that didn't happen there. But this idea that people are being told that in order to lower their rates, they've got to give up something that they would desperately need if they had a bad accident.
Right, and that's something that I know always was a concern that was looked at, and I know that. As well on the other side too is, what does it look like for, say, for instance, you know, just a, as an example, you know, someone gets pulled over without auto insurance because the rates are too high. And, you know, even in the city, we haven't brought this up, but redlining as well, too. Mm-hmm, I mean, that's mm-hmm. been something that's been incredibly impactful to those in the city of Detroit and other areas across the state. But what does that do, and how does that create kind of the cycle if costs or fines pick up there? And, you know, how do people dig themselves out of that hole if say, you know, it starts with them not having insurance? But you're absolutely right. That's something that we do have to be able to consider. You know, we know that, you know, catastrophic accidents happen, and that, you know, that there has to be that ability for people to be taken care of.
Yeah. I want to take one more quick call here. David in Detroit. David, go ahead.
Good morning, and thanks for the conversation. Congratulations on your speakership elect there, Representative Tate. And my question is, with the buffet of issues and challenges that are in front of the caucus now that you have legislative control for the first time in many decades, I'm thinking, you know, is there a time to pause and sort of breathe deeply and think about solving for lowest common denominator? And the example I want to bring up is, in Michigan, public students do not have a right to a quality public education. And they would only get that if it got enshrined in the state constitution, because we know there's a litany of court cases out there. And Detroit hasn't even received its fair share from the federal settlement that they had. So would you support enshrining a right to a quality public education in the state constitution and put that before voters?
Great question, David. Really appreciate that. Go ahead, Joe.
That is a great question. And you're absolutely right. I mean, when we look at, I know there was a literacy lawsuit, and I know there were bills that, you know, after the lawsuit came out, just trying to work with the legislature, and we never got across the finish line. But I think that's something that we do, you know, certainly take a look at. And I think from the legislature's point of view, you know, it is, you know, what can we do, you know, with getting things passed and providing resources to our education system, and then also the policy attached to that. You know, when we look at ballot initiatives, that's going to be a, I think, a larger discussion as we do that we should, you know, have around that. But thinking through, you know, what are those things that we can immediately impact? And I say that, you know, from the government point of view, you know, that takes on a different shape and different timeline. So I think for me, my focus is, you know, understanding, you know, what are the needs of the students to get them to a standard that they can be successful. And then how do we put those resources, how does the state put those resources in educators' hands for them to happen? But that's something that we can continue having conversations about. Obviously, the literacy case is going to be something that's going to be, you know, top of mind as well.
But what about the idea of a constitutional amendment in front of voters to make a quality education part of the Constitution? Would you support that?
Absolutely. I think that's something that we can talk about. And I think for us, putting it out in front of voters, but also being able to have those conversations around, because when we put it out to a vote, what is that going to look like? Stephen,
how do you define it? Right.
Yeah. How do you look at it? Yeah. What's going to be the approach? I think there's going to be, you know, several factors as we look into it. And from, you know, from where I sit and the work that, you know, we have to do at the legislature, passing policy and approving budgets, you know, that's something that's going to obviously be in our wheelhouse, and how we complementing that, if that is, you know, if that moves forward, and making sure that we're still doing our job in the legislature, but still being able to have that conversation and see, you know, is what does that pathway look like? And like you said, how is that going to be defined?
Yeah. Okay. Joe Tate, the state rep from here in Detroit, incoming Speaker of the House in the Michigan House of Representatives. It was really great to talk with you about the legislative agenda come January. Congratulations again. And we hope that you'll come back soon and talk a little more with our listeners.
Happy to do it again, Stephen. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay, we are going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to check in on the issues that are facing schools in Detroit and statewide due to the pandemic and the elections with Chalkbeat reporter Kobe Levin. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.